successful campaign for mayor. Congratulations.
We belong to Flashpoint.
15% of the vote, man. Orale.
Who knows what comes next?
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Cascade Media Convergence, a regional gathering of community-based media makers sharing space and skills to build solidarity on November 14th and 15th on the Portland State University campus. There will be skill shares, issue-based strategy sessions, regional breakouts and workshops, as well as movie screenings and a keynote presentation, editors of Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements. Again, that's the Cascade Media Convergence, November 14th and 15th, on the Portland State University campus in downtown Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for two positions. We are hiring a membership director. This is a part-time position, 32 hours per week. $15.11 per hour. We're also hiring a PM News and Public Affairs Director. This is a salary full-time position paying $31,400 a year. The full job descriptions and instructions for applying can be found on our website on the homepage on the right-hand side under News from the Boo. That's at kboo.fm on the homepage, right-hand side under News from the Boo. Applications are due Friday, November 20th at 5 p.m.
This is 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis, K220 HR Hood River, K282 BH Philomath.
Digital Divide. Today our guest is Wyatt Heidenfelder. Wyatt is a Reed graduate who wrote his thesis on the subject of religion and technology, also sometimes known as trans religion. Wyatt, welcome to the Digital Divide.
Thank you for having me.
Wyatt, for our audience, define what trans religion means.
Well, trans religion was really started specifically with this one movement called Terrasem, but when they say trans religion, it is in one way, meaning that they transcend all other religions, but this is not to say that they are above and beyond any other religions. They're not better than any other religion. They kind of likened it to the way a forest includes all trees. So it sends trans here is more like transverse, and that they kind of include different ideas from religion, different frameworks, but that their movement itself, that the trans religion itself, isn't really any rigid worldview or framework that people have to subscribe to. They say that one can be participate in a trans religion, but still have their own religious belief.
What differentiates this trans religion from, say, just a philosophy?
Well, I think the difference between this as a trans religion and from a philosophy is that they do have their own sets of rituals and practices, even though it's very loosely based. They do kind of also subscribe to the belief that there are actions and beliefs that we can subscribe to as humans here and now that will allow us to transcend some sort of natural order, become more than ourselves, find something more than just what we experience on a day-to-day basis. They have a greater search for meaning that relies upon some sort of supernatural state. But what they believe that to be, it's always very, like I said before, loosely based. It's kind of trans in the sense of transverse.
Well, is that where the technology aspect comes in?
That's exactly where the technology aspect comes in the sense of here, how we transcend the natural order for religions such as these. What certain so-called trans religions say, they suppose themselves to be, they put themselves forward as a loose framework of ideas, concepts, beliefs, feelings, sensibilities, all which lie at the intersection of science and faith. And here, science and technology, in their eyes, are the means by which we can achieve a transcendence or some kind of deployment of faith that will allow us to radically shift ourselves and our relationship to a supernatural power. Here, we really see the prime convergence of nature and technology. Technology being the means by which we can take control of natural laws or laws of the universe, which usually humans are subordinate to. And technology is the way that humans kind of rise above that and begin to control the environment around them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's still a big concept to kind of grasp. And as I was reading your thesis, you mentioned there are three common kind of bullet points that trans religion would that would demarcate trans religion or represent, that would represent trans religion. One of them, and they sounded so far out to me. So one of them was, you know, like eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
joyful immortality.
Right, mm-hmm. Immortality. The second was uploading your consciousness, which I'm guessing the result of that would be the immortality if your consciousness were somehow uploaded to the cloud or some cloud or wherever it was uploaded to, a server somewhere in a building. And then what was the third one?
And the other one, I think, would be kind of making the universe smart, as they say. So within the first two, we say immortality and mind uploading. For them, kind of the basic unit or like the intrinsic value of the universe relies upon information. Everything is essentially information. And the goal of technology and science in general, which they kind of put into their greater belief framework, is that through via technology and via science, we can begin to organize this information into intelligence and make it smart. And eventually what we as humans do with technology, we can kind of start to imbue certain aspects of the environment around us. They use the terms to kind of make things come alive in a way. We'd basically turn chaos into ordered intelligence. So that's another aspect that they see in these kind of movements.
So they're really operating on an assumption that the universe is an unordered, chaotic system.
Mm-hmm. Which they equate with evil, I think, a lot of the time.
Really?
Yeah. Disorder is inherently evil in their eyes.
That is so interesting, mm-hmm. because it seems to work pretty well in a lot of instances in terms of, you know, nature and things that we, I mean, even us,
mm-hmm.
you know, we say disorder, it implies, you know, things that aren't planned or accidents.
Mm-hmm.
So, I feel like I would like to think of myself as a happy accident and not evil.
Yeah.
And not evil. So when we were talking before and we kind of got to the data, you know, that everything being data or mm-hmm. being able to be kind of retranslated as data. And I remember I said, this sounds really Matrix-y.
It is in a way, yeah.
So let's kind of talk about that and that, you know, like how that would physically manifest itself. You know, like what would be needed to realize the religion's tenets?
What would be needed to be realized? Yeah.
You know, like upload your consciousness.
Yeah.
Well, maintain, you know, like supersede your, you know, if your body wears out. I mean, we do have people already, and we were talking about this, where, you know, we have a child printing out, you know, on a 3D printer and mm-hmm. and making a new hand for himself because he doesn't have full functionality of his hand and creating a hand. So that's a very remedial, very simplistic example. But we do see, you know, prosthetics and mm-hmm. Organs, you know, mm-hmm. harvesting of organs, growing, even growing animals to, you know, regardless of whether that's ethically right or wrong. These things are happening.
Yeah, yeah. And I think at the base of all those things, which they kind of are trying to tease out, is such as things as prosthetics or organ transplants, any of that kind of helps to reverse or counteract or overcome those natural processes of decay of those things that take over us. You know, that's like kind of the base of technology, I think, or one way to look at technology is that it helps us to take control of the environment around us. But specifically, some of these movements, sometimes I hesitate to call them religious movements, but they are very involved in the actual production of technology such as nanotechnology. Mind uploading is a big deal with them, which is basically supposes that you can take the mannerisms, beliefs, like any kind of personality trait from a human being, and somehow record that. And in the future, I mean, none of this technology exists now, so it's all kind of
but people fantasy. Are toying with it. It sounds like you're saying people are toying with
it. Yeah, this is not as far out as I think it is coming off as, but you can take certain units or parts of a person, like I said before, kind of the intrinsic value of the universe and our workings is information, and that's somewhat recent outlook that's been developed, but all information. So if you can take someone's information, which is not dependent on your skin, your flesh, or anything like that, which decays, you can eventually create a digital copy of yourself, or say you can upload that information to another, like, substrate, to another body, essentially living forever, because information doesn't necessarily die. Your personality can't necessarily die. So in a way, information is the soul for them. So that's one way that you can kind of realize one of their tenets being immortality. I mean, it can be virtual, like a virtual version of yourself, any kind of stuff like that. Yeah.
It's pretty way out.
It is, yeah.
Although we've had people, I mean, right now I'm thinking of Philip K. Dick, you know, and
exactly.
I'm thinking of his work and thinking, well, he's way ahead.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just regardless of the individual Philip K. Dick, mm-hmm. you know, his writings, I mean, this is what I'm hearing. This sounds like what he wrote about.
Totally, totally, yeah. And it's interesting because his conception of a supreme deity or Valis per se is very close to what kind of these trans religions imagine to be.
Do you think he was influential to them?
Totally, yeah. Philip K. Dick, Octavia Butler, all of them kind of were precursors to, I think, the intellectual vigor of this movement. I mean, I think, my opinion, Philip K. Dick's kind of whole philosophy and theology concerning the universe was a lot more intricate and developed than this, and he wasn't actually kind of involved in the concrete production of technology as we're seeing now. But yeah, right. I agree.
So so let's talk about the movement, the mm-hmm. movement of the trans religion. And there's one leading organization, as I understand it. Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, there's one kind of organization that I studied. There's kind of a main movement, I think it's at the forefront of all this, called transhumanism, which is basically... So there's kind of one main current that runs throughout it. It's not explicitly religious, called transhumanism. And transhumanism basically refers to the discourse and normative principles concerning that loose movement surrounding research and current and future advances in technology such as artificial intelligence or cryogenics or mind uploading. And even bioengineering, which a lot of them are actually involved in. But they claim that scientific evolution will utterly transform the ways in which we relate with the universe and our understanding of what it actually means to be human. As you can see in their name, they believe that human nature is going to radically change within the next century even. Some people even project it to be by the year 2050, we'll see an event called what they call the singularity, which is that point in history which the processing power or the ability of machines or our own technologies will surpass humans or perhaps will be integrated with humans. And what we understand to be ourselves will be radically altered. But from that, we get a series of other kind of religious movements. Sometimes I'm hesitant to call them religions per se, because that's a notoriously hard concept to pin down. But the one that I studied is called Terasem. And Terasem being the name of a religion in one of Octavia Butler's books, Parable of the Sower. Here it was founded by an individual named Martine Rothblatt, who she is, I don't know, I think a certifiable genius in some ways. She founded Sirius Radio, Geostar. She's worked on the Human Genome Project. She's founded one of the biotech company. A couple years ago, she was named the richest female CEO in America. She's a transgender woman too. Started the Terasem movement, trans religion. This is where kind of the name trans religion comes from. And that was founded in 2004, and that kind of surrounds a loose set of organizations, one part being a faith movement, the trans religion part, another part being cryogenic facilities, another part being kind of that mind uploading program. But basically it has a loose kind of framework, and all of it's just oriented at kind of this transhumanist goal of transcending our human nature via our own technological creations. There's a lot in there, but yeah.
It is a lot, right? It just makes my brain want to explode because it sounds so way out, and yet, you know, if we go back just a brief 400 years in human history, we have virtually no technology. I mean, very primitive technologies compared to what we have now. I mean, obviously, we're technology, but nothing. I mean, nothing without wires. There was nothing without string attached to it. And now we're way past James Bond. Some of these concepts sort of imply giving up your individuality. You know, maybe there's like this preserving yourself, but it sounds and feels like maybe you have to give up individuality to have this immortality, if that were possible. You know, in our science fiction world, we're still kind of working in the science fiction-y idea phase, although we know that there's research, concrete research happening in this area. Do you want to speak to actual research going on to achieve some of these goals?
Yeah. I mean, let me just say, in a way, it does, I think, involve kind of giving up your individuality. But I think, in a way, some of them believe that we're kind of coerced into a deception of our own individuality based upon this is my skin, this is my body. And once we get rid of that, you know, once we figure out a way to kind of transmit whatever is me, whatever I understand to be myself, into something else, you know, you kind of, your individuality becomes more fluid. But kind of the people thinking about this, such as Martine Rothblatt, which is studies the religion, started the religion I studied, and Ray Kurzweil, who kind of started the idea of what I previously said was a singularity and transhumanism. He's been called kind of the Thomas Edison of our generation and has worked a lot with kind of text recognition and creating robots and a bunch of different things. He's the head engineer of Google now. So, I mean, if anything, like the work being done right now is being heavily invested in by a lot of kind of Silicon Valley type folk. But the
I think we could say for some of us that Google knows us better than we know ourselves.
Yeah.
Not bragging about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's an interesting point because kind of the currency of this kind of research, it requires what it means. It requires understanding of what it means to be human, which requires kind of when we were talking about mind uploading or creating an artificial robot that resembles a human, it requires knowing what it means to be human, which requires human thoughts, human behavior, requires studying that. So the currency...
Self-indulgence.
I mean, the kind of the currency of the future is the information which we understand to be our individual personality in a way.
In my mind, I'm revolting against the ideas of flawless humans. But I mean, that's what makes people interesting is all of their, you know, flaws and positive traits and our foibles, our vulnerability. Would we lose those things? Would we lose our vulnerability and, you know, our sense of who would we be without flaws?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the response of many transhumanists and in the circle would be is we'd be whoever we'd want to be, which is a terrifying thought in itself. But I mean, it comes back to that question of control, you know, we're going to make ourselves and our environment, in our own image and with or without flaws, I think is up to us. I mean, necessarily, I mean, I don't know. It's we'd be whoever we'd want to be.
Well, idealistically, sure. But let's go to the next step where, you know, someone's in charge of running all the stuff that allows you to continue to exist,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still physical stuff, and maybe it'd be run by robots, but somebody's in charge, right? Mm-hmm. Someone's going to be in charge. What's to keep that person from becoming, you know, the universal tyrant?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we give up our... Not that we're really giving up our physical bodies, because they're going to go. They have an expiration date. We already know that. Mm-hmm. That's 100% true for everybody. So when we give up our physical bodies and we inhabit wherever, the ether, when we inhabit space with our consciousness, and we rely on technology to continue our conscious existence with or without a physical body. Who's in charge?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a legitimate concern. And
Google? Is it Google? Is Google in charge?
Yeah, I mean, the question of power still runs throughout here, and they don't really. A lot of time, what I spent studying was that they don't seem to address a lot of the utopian versions of this. Don't address that at all, and I think kind of on both sides, you get kind of a lot of skirting of different questions, but you get either a very dystopian outlook, which I think is kind of that revolting feeling you're feeling bubbling up inside yourself, or you get a very utopian outlook, which just kind of skirts these questions, just says like, it's all going to be great. Everyone's going to have what they want. We're going to be able to do whatever we want. We're going to see whatever we want, go wherever we want. They're both kind of skirting that questions, but I think the question of control here, I guess, for kind of this one trans religion that I studied is especially pertinent because it's headed by this individual Rothblatt that has started a lot of companies, multimillionaire, part of the 1%, seems to have good intentions, you know, but is asking for the participants of this religion to start participating in this technology, such as trying to create a mind, like trying to upload your thoughts and feelings to create a future version of yourself, or creating...
Like in the film Transcendence.
Exactly, yeah.
Were they emulating that? Was that like a deliberate emulation of what we're describing here?
I think, the other way around. I think it's touching on a lot of stuff that's starting to come up around questions of this. I mean, there's always that kind of fear that certain technologies will have the potential for abuse. But I think the important part is that technology and science in general don't inherently posit anything evil or good within them. It's the projections of different groups or individuals onto that, saying we'll use it for this ends. Like, it's not going to be this, it will be that. So I think what the important part to look at is saying, why do we have such a fear regarding this technology? Why do they not have this fear at all? Why do they seem to be ignoring these issues? And I think by analyzing that while evaluating your own concerns, I think definitely will help to kind of push this conversation forward and see how...
It's an ethics bonanza.
It is, yeah. And they some of the religions that I studied do say that we need a system of ethics, but none of them actually go into saying what that ethical system would look like. Say, all right, so we're going to have like the ability to control our environment via technology, loosely speaking, and that will help us eradicate evil. Well, who's going to say what is evil and what is not?
Isn't that the question?
That's the question.
I mean, we hear that, like, just watch a debate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people imposing their individual values.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has every implication of, well, maybe we don't want to upload everybody. You know, mm-hmm. maybe some people would be better off if they weren't preserved forever. And who's making that decision, and what are the traits and qualities that they're deciding are that?
And in a sense, their kind of use of markedly religious language, I think, is an attempt to attempt on their part to deploy religion as sort of like a moral compass or a moral forebearer. To kind of, they're like, oh, we can use religion or other systems of morality to help us in the future. I mean, and they don't say specifically. This is kind of gets to the part of like them kind of skirting around, you know, which was a lot of what I looked at. They're using religion in a way that kind of benefits their own interests in saying, take for Ray Kurzweil, the head engineer of Google, or Martin Rothblatt, who is... as an explicitly formulated religion around this stuff, it kind of reinforces their own project and profit when you say, hey, don't be afraid of artificial intelligence or living forever by having your mind in a computer. It's going to be okay for this and this reason. And sometimes it seems that they do use the language of religion as an almost comforting precedent for the ways that, like, we can overcome negative structures of power or misuses or abuses of technology.
Well, I can see in the future when we really are faced with environmental crisis that is, that's creating famine, that's, you know, really altering the way that we live, maybe how much electricity is available. I mean, really... You know, because I guess that's my doomsday version of it, you know, but clearly we're headed towards changes in our environment. And there aren't going to be any surprises when, things don't grow where they used to grow. And economies that are based on, basically dependent on the environment, are going to be radically altered. And I can see there being an opportunity for different religions to kind of jump in and offer whatever it is that they have to offer to affected people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people are vulnerable, especially in times of cataclysmic change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone offers you immortality in exchange for I'm not sure what, I can see people taking that, opting in, or saying, you're not going to be able to continue to live or exist in this current environment. We have an alternative environment for you.
Yeah, and I think there's two important points.
All you have to do is give up your body.
I think there's two important points in your comment right there. One being kind of the implicit inevitability of technological growth, which I think is starting to become more and more prevalent, that whatever direction we're heading in a direction and there's no way to stop it despite our kind of Luddite leanings. Like, technology is going to continue to become more advanced and grow and grow and grow. And within that, there's also kind of the incalculability of the future. We're in a time of intense change, and a time of change when change itself is changing faster and faster. It seems like everything is replaced just as quickly as it came. But there is a certain kind of uncertainty regarding the future, which offers, I think, a prime opportunity for certain belief systems to step in and kind of offer some kind of system of meaning. You know, there's within this kind of incalculability and kind of realization that everything is changing so fast, there's a certain disenchantment, you know, with our environment, and especially with that change being facilitated by science, which kind of posits that humans are just kind of some random little part of the universe. We're not the center of the universe. And says, it doesn't really offer any explanation saying, I mean, it offers all these doomsday scenarios, you know, global warming and change of environment, stuff like that, but doesn't really offer any kind of comfort. Like I said before, I think it's my belief that technology and science are kind of inherently neutral. So what it takes is for something like a trans religion to come in, or the adaptation of more traditional religions to kind of come in and offer a framework for understanding this change and kind of offer some kind of advice on what things are going to look like, which these trans religions do. They kind of, I mean, despite their technology being kind of far out there, I don't think it's necessarily that far-fetched of an idea itself for them to kind of suppose that the future will look like this and this. But in order for it to look like this and this, you have to believe our tenets. But I think the primary aspect of these religions is that their tenets and what they want their believers to follow isn't that strict. Like I said before, a trans religion kind of includes all trees, or kind of includes all religions the way forest includes the trees. You can still be a Christian and still kind of believe in this religion, trans religion called Teresim. So for them, the kind of primary aspect and what I focused on a lot in my research was that their own kind of dogma and the dogma of kind of religions that are at their intersection of science and faith, the dogma is about change itself, not necessarily what that change is bringing, but the change itself.
It's a new kind of evolution. Thank you for tuning into The Digital Divide. I'm Rabia Yaman, your host, talking with Wyatt Heidenfelder today, talking about trans religion and the intersection of religion and technology. I had a vision of the snake oil trans religion salesman coming to town and being like, hey, I'll upload your brain. And you know, like telling people they were going to upload their brains or their consciousness, and then, you know, not really having the technology because you don't know if the technology is going to work. That's a very interesting idea. I mean, it's so far out. So, you know, at what point in an individual's physical life do you upload their brain? Do you do it when they're older, more have more experience? Do you do it when they're a child and they have no experience, but they're innocent, naive, and malleable? Do you do it to middle age or, you know, younger people? How would that work?
I mean, I think in a sense, it's kind of always constantly happening. You're always leaving little traces of yourself everywhere in any kind of think act of creation or any kind of digital labor. There's little certain aspects of what might constitute this person that is Rabia, and that you could kind of start to kind of put the puzzle pieces together and start to see kind of individualistic aspects of their environment, kind of imprints, you know? I feel that that happens a lot. I don't think it's kind of a one-time thing. I mean, what Teresim is offering is services that where you kind of like an online diary almost, where you upload your pictures and stuff like that. But right now it's at younger stages of development, the technology itself. But I think this kind of process is always going on, not necessarily the recreation of yourself into a digital substrate, but
but they have successfully mapped a mind. And am I wrong? A consciousness of a mouse or something has actually been uploaded. Is that true?
I'm not sure about that little mouse, but I feel that a lot of these technologies that they're supposing don't exist right now, but within the near future, I think we will have the ability for, I mean, life extension at the very least, the ability to recreate something that strongly resembles a human. And the implications of that are far and wide. And a lot of what, and there's even more traditional religions or people from that background that are starting to think about questions of when do we have kind of a very uncanny likeness of a human? Does the same theological formations and rules and rituals apply in that situation? Can a robot be saved?
All bets are off, right?
Does the grace of God apply to a robotic mouse or something
to
like
a technological
that?
Well, right. I mean, that's an oxymoron to say a technological being.
Yeah.
Right? Because technology doesn't have a consciousness. But when we talk about autonomous artificial intelligence, that actually is artificial intelligence with its own decision-making ability. I don't know that we have a word for it. Somebody probably has a word for it. It might not be consciousness. So, you know, if we can create, we can capture all the information about you or me and create, I don't know, a consciousness or a robot that has, let's go 93% for some reason, 93% of things about me that make me me, but it's still not me. There's that 7% that's missing.
Mm-hmm.
What's that missing 7%? And how would such a being make decisions? Like how would it make decisions based on what? Just because it's a composite, because it's a digital scrapbook, doesn't mean that it is going to be react or interpret events in the same way that a human can. Or can it?
I think right now there's no way of knowing, and if I were to assert a way assert something specific about it, I think that would just go to prove that I think humans are constantly anthropomorphizing future technologies. We're saying, well, I mean, like I was just saying 5 minutes ago, like it'll be like me like this or it won't, or it'll have the same sets of desires and beliefs. But there's really no way of knowing, and the only way to kind of determine that is kind of to constantly reevaluate while these technologies are developed. Like, are we going in the right direction, you know, which a lot of these transhumanists and people kind of ignore. They ignore like the deep difficulties and dangers involved with this technology.
When you present them with, you know, the cautions or the concerns or the ethical arguments or, you know, class questions about class and who would be eligible, then they're not really addressing that at this point. It'd be like, it's all going to be fine because we're going to be so smart and the machines are going to be so smart. They'll work out the problems.
Yeah, I mean, and there are people thinking about that now. There's a couple of think tanks in San Francisco, but one of kind of leader at the forefront of thinking about the existential risks and I guess personal ramifications that such technology has. His name is Nick Bostrom, and he is a philosopher, has written a lot on the existential risks of creating such technology and what it means for us as humans.
Is he opposed?
Is he opposed? He used to be for. I think his latest book, I think it's just called Superintelligence. His latest book is kind of a little bit more hesitant, which is starting to become, I think, more the case. I mean, it's always kind of been the case. We've always kind of seen this in science fiction a lot. It's kind of always a dystopic view of
what's
going to happen.
Because people know they're not that great. People know that we're so flawed and fickle and vain and all the seven deadly sins. We are all of those things in addition to all the good things. And I think that there's...
We're also not that smart compared to what we're going to create.
We are not that smart. That's right. And I think that there's this feeling, rightfully so, that, you know, any machine that smart would be like, yeah, you know, these humans, they're just, they're kind of a problem. They're not that beneficial for the overall ecosystem. And I think that there's a real concern that amongst these brilliant thinkers, these seminal minds, that, you know, if AI becomes autonomous, they're going to be like, yeah, you know, people, just not that great. And I think so, and that, you know, the machines would see no use for us anymore.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, one kind of funny thought experiment, I think, is not even how they feel about us. They might not even be capable of feeling at all, or like whatever we create. I keep saying that, I keep using kind of really broad, loose pop culture terms for what we think our technology is going to be.
That's all we've
but
got.
Say as we create a say we create a super intelligent machine whose only occupation and job and purpose is to create as many paperclips, excellent paperclips, as it can. What's to say that that machine will see us humans, which aren't our physical structure and composite structure, is not that of an excellent paperclip?
Not at all.
So its primary goal is to create paperclips. So what's to say that it won't arrange us humans as excellent paperclips, and not even no moral considerations at all? Just it's we'll just do what it's told and do what it was created to do,
right?
And all of us will become excellent paperclips. What it means for us, I think, is becoming more and more important. What is our place in this kind of ever intensifying and changing universe? And that's kind of where I think the role of religion has been especially pertinent throughout history. And I think it's especially pertinent now, is how do we extract meaning from this kind of seemingly impersonal change that's going on? And how do we kind of reinsert some kind of grander framework into this that involves us as humans or transhumans or whatever we're going to be in some kind of substantial and substantial way?
Now, transhuman is a different word than the word we used before, which was transreligion. So,
yeah.
Now, my understanding of transhuman is where technology has really been integrated into our humanness, mm-hmm. you know, physically, and maybe even psychologically,
mm-hmm.
right? Is there anything else in there physiologically?
It's a kind of a whole slew of things.
Right. But we're not just flesh and blood anymore. We're now technology, flesh and blood. We're not.
Yeah.
We're still human.
Yeah.
But we're more than that.
Yeah. Well, I guess a better way to put it is that our flesh and blood are just flesh and blood. You know, that doesn't really determine what we are. Like I was saying before, the kind of dogma, creed, and all these is some kind of conception of change. And Ray Kurzweil, as I said before, the inventor and head engineer of Google, has said that human is only that which can change itself. So here again, we see kind of the primacy placed on change. It's not, even when we talk about mind uploading too, I was saying what is you is your thoughts and feelings and all stuff like that. But when we get down to the heart of it, I think, and a trend that we're seeing in this is that everything else aside, like the important thing that we should grasp is that things are changing. We have the ability to change things via technology, so we should do it. And that is kind of the end all be all for them.
It's matrixy, right? Because if we give up our bodies completely,
mm-hmm.
and yet there's technology to maintain our consciousness or emulate it, then it's really like the Matrix. Except, you know, maybe we're not the energy source for the machines, but maybe we are. I don't know. But, I mean, really, that's really what we're talking about, is where, you know, the consciousness is preserved and there's a way to, you know, emulate a world or not. And that's, it's like, I think that that's so beyond my own ability to really grasp.
Yeah, I mean, here's a little zinger for you. I think just even thinking about this expresses the potentiality of it, which I guess in turn, if you abstract from that, is it could already be the case.
Thought word indeed. Again. right? Every yeah. action starts with a thought.
Yeah.
So in writing your thesis on this subject matter, what blew your mind? What was so intriguing about it that you committed yourself to that many pages?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I started in it just because I was really interested in looking at the ways that technology and science can be mobilized within forms of religiosity and within forms of faith. Both as faith and technology are both kind of things that dictate so much of our lives and are becoming ever present. And some things and things that seem so disparate all the time, I was really interested in the ways that those can be mutually reinforcing. And the thing that kind of blew my mind is that we see, such as like in these trans religions or in transhumanism, it's not so much the reconciliation of science and religion, but it's kind of the development of a new belief system in which both are kind of feeding back into each other, in which technology and scientific development are required for spiritual progress in this case. And that's something that kind of really interested me, is the idea that something so material, such as technology, can by some be correlated to the advancement and evolution of humanity.
I see that as being inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
I see that technology's role in advancing, whether we go with it or not, is inevitable. But assigning a belief system and a dogma and calling it a religion is really a hard leap for me to take.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like an unnecessary component because of those unanswered questions of who's dictating what the beliefs are.
Mm-hmm.
Who dictates that and who's eligible?
Yeah, I mean, there is kind of a sense of why does religion have to enter this conversation at all, especially if you take a look at TerraSum Online, they kind of use this really out there aberrant terminology. A lot of it doesn't really make sense. So why inject religion into the project of increasing our human capability?
Right.
And
it just seems that belief systems will kind of, they'll come organically as technology advances and as it sounds like, humans become more dependent.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly likely integrated with technology. It seems that beliefs would come organically, and the changes in our identity of who we see we are or who we think we are, calling it a religion, I don't know, it feels manipulative.
It feels a little bit manipulative to me too. My personal belief is that it's not necessarily religion, whatever we mean by that, which right. It's always hard to say.
Feels more like a philosophy to me.
It is, yeah, it's a philosophy and belief system, but again, it's not really the components of the belief system, which I think are important here.
The only faith that's required is my faith in the ability of the technician who's going to upload my brain.
Yeah.
Like, that's the faith I'm required to have. You're going to do that, and I'm going to still have a sense of me. Because if I don't still have a sense of me, then why do I need a religion?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If I don't exist anymore as an individual ego or personality, which I think is the same thing, then I don't have a need for religion, because then I'm just part of the soup. It's not to say that there aren't side soups or more than one, because I don't know. But the bringing the religion into that seems like an unnecessary component when we're just talking about, you know, technological advances that will either be integrated with or in some ways even supersede us.
Mm-hmm.
Ethics, sure. Maybe that will be the religion. Maybe it'll be a religion of ethics around that, but I see Dr. Evil lurking in the corner. Or even worse, having to adopt a belief system or a religion in order to be eligible for this eternal life.
Yeah, I think that they're trying to break down that concept of eligibility, though. Because the only kind of requirement of whatever belief system they're putting forth is kind of openness and diversity. They want to increase the diversity of people and thoughts and beliefs that are going on. So it's not necessarily...
Sounds good on paper.
Where we see, I mean, traditional religions kind of, they typically like possess a metaphysical and like cosmological conception of the universe that provides foundations for belief and practice, and also a set of normative principles and symbolic actions which demarcate its adherence. So I think if you're taking that kind of more traditional conception of religion and placing it within this kind of narrative of technological development, yeah, I think the question of why do we need it does come up. And I think that's certainly justifiable. But I do think that religion, almost above any kind of other cultural creation of humans, has the ability to adapt. Despite its rigidity, I think over history we've seen religions, and not just religion, religion's not its own little separate monster in the closet, the kind of religious organism develop quite dramatically over history. And I think here we kind of see a new, I mean, in the 60s we saw a kind of new age religion, which wasn't really religion, you know, but I mean, we still called it new age religion. It was kind of just this loose network of beliefs and kind of a buffet of practices that you take from.
A bunch of different philosophies and religions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's important looking at like why did we need religion then? I mean, I think kind of...
The Beatles.
Yeah, the Beatles. I mean, here it's kind of like I was saying before about change. Let's compare it to like traditional religions where they have kind of the rigid framework. Like I was saying before, they have a metaphysical framework that you adhere to, and your rituals and beliefs that you have within that religion are only powerful and potent insofar as they stack up with those tenets, you know?
And if you believe in them, like it's the belief that gives them the power.
Yeah, yeah. And here, kind of the point is not to create a game with rules in which you lose the game if you don't adhere by the rules. The rules of the game are more to mess with the rules and mess with the boundaries and kind of erase the boundaries and blend the boundaries between what we think is science, what is culture, what is religion, what is progress, and kind of erase those boundaries and kind of create a fluidity between those. And the only way to kind of continue any kind of meaningful existence within a society in which everything is changing so incredibly fast is to keep this change going.
With the advancements of the technology.
Yeah. Like I say, I mean, the advancement of technology is the means by which we will achieve, I guess, what they think is an improved or supernatural state of existence. But here again, it's the dogma of change is most important, because the only way you keep playing this type of game is to keep changing the rules, you know? Because like I said before, the incalculability of the future doesn't play nicely with having a strict set of theological beliefs such as the Bible, which might not always have the same kind of potency in a future which we're living in, like our own virtual realities or in a Matrix type scenario, you know?
Might not.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of, like I said before, it kind of constantly takes a reevaluation of the rules by which you're playing and looking at the environment in which you are in. That's important here. And this is why they say they're a trans religion. They don't really want to commit to anything in particular, because they know if they commit to anything, that leads to stagnation. In a way, I'm not railing on any other. I studied religion studied religion for 5 years, and I have a lot to say on it. But I guess in this case, the kind of heart of and life blood of any meaningful existence within a technological future lies within us being able to create new boundaries and see beyond boundaries and reevaluate our own position within a universe that might not always look how it does now.
Well, that seems like an excellent point to wrap up our conversation, which is a big conversation. Wyatt, where can people learn more, or can people contact you if they want to learn more about trans religion, transhumanism?
Yeah, I love talking about this stuff. And I'd love to talk with anyone that has any questions. This was a pretty general conversation, but if anyone wants to talk about anything more specific, my email is roccowy@gmail.com. If anyone wants to do their own,
you may regret that.
If anyone wants to do their own research, you can look up Terasem online.
How do you spell that?
Terasem. There's kind of a lot out there.
Volumes.
Yeah, there's a lot out there. I'm also kind of the first person to do research on this specific subject. But yeah, there's a lot out there to explore, and hopefully people will start to think about the ways this is influencing their lives.
I'm talking with Wyatt Heidenfelder, Reed graduate, and wrote his thesis on subject of the intersection of religion and technology, also known as trans religion. Thank you so much for joining the conversation today.
My pleasure.
Be sure and tune in to The Digital Divide every second Friday at 11 a.m. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO Portland. This is Rabia Yeaman for The Digital Divide.
Oh, it's just another This is KBOO Portland.
And now the cable news at noon for today, Friday, November 13th, 2015. I'm Don Merrill. In local news, Oregon's high school graduation rates really are terrible, according to Dan Jameson, vice president of the Chalkboard Project, an education advocacy group. Oregon ranks 47th out of 50 states despite claims by the study's critics that other states lie about their graduation rates. Jameson said Oregon's 72% versus the national average of 81% signals a clear failure, not a false negative, as others claim. The Oregonian, in a five-part series on education in Oregon, identified absenteeism as one of several problems plaguing the state. Former chief of Oregon schools Rob Saxton, a critic of the study, admitted, "We have way too many dropouts in this state." In national news, the cry for racial justice is going up again at campuses and universities around the country. After the high-profile resignations of the president and the chancellor at the University of Missouri on Monday, amid charges that they were unresponsive to racial challenges at Mizzou, The Guardian reports a wave of student marches and walkouts is sweeping the country. Changes in administration at Ithaca College in New York, Claremont McKenna College in California, Virginia Commonwealth University, and others has led at least one academic to proclaim the birth of a new social movement. Halifu Asumare, a professor of African American and African Studies